Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, it's Adam here. At the top of this episode of Monkey Tennis, I wanted to address some rumours that have been circulating recently about us. Rumours that are categorically untrue. Rumours that state that the people who've been donating to us on Ko-fi are only doing it to get their names read out at the beginning of the podcast. Now, I'd like to say those rumours are categorically untrue. I would never support that sort of behaviour, and I'm sure neither would James Mayer, Alexander Ord, Jonathan Davies, Ben Brook, Julian Jones, Christopher Adams, Rob Waugh, or any of the other people who've donated generously in the last week or so. That said, if you are feeling out of the goodness of your heart that you'd like to support us for producing almost 100 episodes for free, then please do pop to Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/monkeytennis, and you can shout us the cost of a cup of coffee, or if you're feeling very generous, one for each of the five members of Monkey Tennis. That's right, there are four hosts, but producer Jed works tirelessly to make us sound not shit all the time, and that actually tends to see him working through most nights. So if anyone's in desperate need of a coffee or a Ko-fi, it's probably producer Jed, and you can top up his allowance at ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. Thank you very much for your generous support, and here comes the podcast.
Welcome to Knowing Me, Knowing You. Knowing me, Alan Partridge. Knowing you, the audience. I've got a hit on my hands.
Monkey Tennis?
Is that good therapy or balmy old cack?
Conrad Knightsons. Monkey Tennis?
I'm Alan Partridge.
Why are you such a prick?
Lots of meaty chat.
Monkey Tennis?
I just want you to admit that you hate Les Dennis.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
Monkey Tennis?
Okay, I'm in Manhattan. What do I do now?
You are a little shit.
Monkey Tennis?
That, in England, is a whore.
I've taken drugs!
Lord Morgan?
If you speak again, I will physically hit you.
And on that bombshell...
Monkey Tennis?
Thank goodness it's radio. I never thought I'd say that.
Hello again, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where today we'll be tackling episode 5 of Knowing Me, Knowing You, the radio series. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Conrad Knight Socks.
Nick Alder.
Conrad Knight Socks.
And Tom Stab.
Conrad Knight Socks.
So let's get the TX date for this episode. When did this first go out?
This was the 29th of December, 1992.
And crucially, Alan's live from Las Vegas, which seems like a very expensive way to run a Radio 4 show.
And of course, this is a bit of a parallel with Know Me, Know You, the TV show, where Alan does a live broadcast, well, does a broadcast from France. So
yes.
In both series, there is an episode where they are outside of London.
Yes, and if we look at episode order inconsistencies, this is show 3 in Everybody's Word.
Same in mine, yep.
Right. So Radio Radio, Episode 5, Book, Script, Episode 3.
Quick question to the group. Has anyone else been to Vegas?
Yes, I've been to Vegas.
Yep.
Too young to gamble, though.
We've all been to Vegas.
Yep. Been twice. Mm. Jed? 14
Jed's
times.
Jed's been to Vegas 14 times.
Jed, is that a lie? What?
What?
What were you doing in Vegas that you had to go there 14 times?
Well, you in money trouble.
Well, I've been to like LA like over 20
times. The question was Vegas.
And it's quite near, so it's not 14 times.
I've done the drive. It's about 7 hours.
Yeah, it's not that close.
I'm not a gambler either, so like I don't really.
Adam, take charge.
I'm going to take his mic. Yeah. That is very much the I'm not a gambler that comes coupled with I could stop any time I want.
Yeah, I don't take it seriously. It's fine. It's not a problem.
There's a reason we've started up the Ko-fi.
No detail about why I went there 14 times.
No. Very much still a mystery, and that's how we like it.
It's a little challenge to the listeners. Please send us your reasons why you think Jed has been to Vegas 14 times.
So Alan in Vegas is quite interesting. It's notable that he seems to love American things at this point. I wondered if this episode going south is the beginning of his turning against American things that obviously manifests itself when Michael and Tex become friends in I'm Alan Partridge.
Only 90 seconds in, he's insisting that his co-host is not a prostitute.
Yeah, important to draw that line.
She's not a whore. Nevertheless, she's the sort of woman who you wouldn't mind paying cash to be with.
Because she's so beautiful and lovely. It's a compliment, sure.
And also, Alan has to shush the audience because they're laughing and clapping so much to that point.
The alarm bells were ringing for me here. Absolutely mad applause. Yeah. He's clearly going to be upstaged.
Yeah. And that's a little bit like when there was the Knowing Me, Knowing You TV episode where they had the beauty pageant.
Mm.
And didn't we talk about that they prepped the audience to go wild for one of the contestants, but the contestants didn't know?
Yeah.
But it's a bit like, I mean, I don't know whether they probably haven't prepped so that Coogan wouldn't know what's going on. But yeah, just it's clearly a layered joke that the audience are wild to be seeing Kendall Ball there and they don't care about Alan.
Because he says, it's great you're on my show. And she just responds saying, the show.
Yeah, great to be on the show, my show.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is it worth just explaining how Alan introduces the show, that it's a real half-pound cheeseburger of a show? lots of meaty chat, a salad of wit, and a flap of amusing cheese. I also enjoyed Alan introduces himself as the equivalent of an English Johnny Carson. My note here, he wishes we should probably compare. Johnny Carson, a very successful American TV host, comedian, writer, and producer. He won 6 Emmy Awards, the Television Academy 1980 Governor's Award, a 1985 Peabody Award, and was inducted into the Television Academy Hall of Fame in 1987.
Yes, but
comparing to Alan Partridge, TV Quick's Man of the Moment, 1994.
I was going
to
say, was Johnny Carson TV Quick's Man of the Moment? I don't think so.
No, but at that point, even
sour
Alan,
grapes.
That's 2 years in the future for Alan, so he's not even that.
But yeah, he hasn't got there.
Also, has Johnny Carson got a podcast about him? I don't think so.
He might do.
He doesn't.
Alan says, listen to me and look at her, forgetting briefly that this is a radio series.
There's another error in every ruddy word where the text says, I don't know if this is the same in yours, Tom, when he talks about Carly Simon, it says Collie Simon.
Yes, that is incorrect in it. And that's kind of like you were saying about, is it like
dictated.
A dictated thing?
Yeah.
Because it's just, it might be a misheard pronunciation and that's how it's been typed out.
Because if you think about it, 2003, when this book was published, The show was in 1992. Mm. So the chances of the original scripts being readily available might be quite minimal. So they might have to have had someone listen to the show and dictate the script, maybe. I don't know. It's a theory.
Also, it is that level of how much was there a properly typed up script that even existed back then, and how much was a bit loose and improvised as well. If you're spending 90 minutes in the Paris studios per episode and it's a half hour broadcast on Radio 4, there may not be a proper textual transcript of that anyway.
You'd still think, however the process that they got
Collie Simon?
Well, exactly. Whatever the process is, you would think someone would proofread that and think that clearly should say Carly Simon, because that's a famous singer.
Mm. It would just make me think that I wonder if the transcript was done by someone that wasn't particularly invested in it and had, you know, clearly not spent that much time on it. And it can't have been proofread.
The great thing is, though, I was just thinking, unless if we're being stupid and there is a Collie Simon and we're just getting it wrong thing about Carly Simon, but if you Google Collie Simon, the first result you get is a picture of Simon Cowell with some collie dogs.
Brilliant.
Yep. So that's fine.
The first guests here are Hollywood star couple, a British actor and a US actress, Sally Hoff and Conrad Knight. It's sort of made clear that she's part of like a kind of Hollywood dynasty, Mimi Langland's daughter and Lara Langland's sister. They play Thank You for the Music, which is, I think, one of the few non-relevant walk-on songs Alan doesn't even attempt to kind of tie it to them because they're not musicians, are they?
I think Sally Hoff is Sally Hoff is a singer.
Oh, my mistake. Sorry, I have her down as an actress. Maybe I got that wrong.
I think she's perhaps a singer slash actress.
Right. Okay. And I mean, obviously, this is one of those situations, a bit like The Hypnotist, where we have similar types of stars in the TV series, but they're a different age and they're kind of, the way the interview goes is very different to here. Mm. But they have obviously kind of done a similar thing.
It's Tanya Beaumont, Gary Barker TV version, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So, as you mentioned with the Carly Simon thing, it becomes clear Alan tried to book a bigger name, either her sister Lara, Liza Minnelli, Barbara Streisand or Carly Simon. Couldn't get any of them.
They're all working tonight, but you are available.
Alan does have to, again, shush them because they're just making small talk with Kendall. And again, they're more interested in Kendall than they are.
Yeah.
And Alan really has to sort of worm his way in to establish himself as the host.
Well, I think he hates that they've got an immediate rapport and he's not a part of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you think as well that I think that the conceit in the APU is that this is a Hollywood couple that are of A level of fame, but even in the APU, they're kind of D-list at best, much like how I think the guests in the TV show, that, you know, in the APU, they are famous people, but they're not top notch. They're not A-list. It's kind of like we're scraping the barrel because no one else is free.
And a lot of the interview relates to their more famous relatives rather than them themselves. So I was quite surprised that Kendall, the co-host, becomes the hard interviewer, takes an unexpected turn, starts tackling the guests about her mother's alcoholism, which she says was a very private problem. I've written a book about it, and that's all I have to say. Brilliant. And then they then go on to Conrad's 1979 autobiography called A Gent in L.A. Alan's very confused because he thought it was Agent in L.A. with the interesting bonus fact that legally Conrad can now be called a cunt in print because he tried and failed to sue Spy magazine for calling him that.
Yeah,
and so it was accurate enough.
Yeah, so the setup there is that Spy magazine changed the first two letters of the word gent and left the last two. So I like the fact that obviously it's a 6:30 p.m. Radio 4 comedy, even they can't say cunt at this time. But, you know, it's all there for the audience to work out. And I think this exchange is probably one of my favourite exchanges in the series when they're talking about it basically set a legal precedent that people can call him. He can be referred to cunt in print without fear of litigation. So they're clarifying just print. So Alan says, no, I couldn't call you that. And Conrad says, no, but you could fax me. And Alan asks, scribble it down on a piece of paper and hold it up to your face. Conrad says, perfectly legal, yes, and people do that. I absolutely love that exchange. It's brilliant.
It turns out that there is some basis for this because Conrad turned over a load of massive stars and exposed them or claimed they were communists during the era of McCarthyism. So he is a bit of a rotten shid.
So the list of all those people, Bogart, Chaplin, Miller, Kazan, Houston, they were all either called in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee, which was real, were members of the American Communist Party, or for a time were accused of being communists.
About Charlie Chaplin, I think Alan says the walk seems to be saying be a communist. And I just thought, as Alan the author, that would be phrased slightly differently. And it would be be a communist, his walk seemed to say. Slight difference.
Alan tries to sort of diminish the achievements of his guests. So he says to Conrad, you did the series of dinosaur films. Now they were rubbish, weren't they? Although Conrad claims that one of them won an Oscar for best use of animated dinosaur. as you might expect, that is not a genuine Oscar category. But I did
a shame.
I did find a few Oscar categories that used to exist but have since been retired.
Oh, so, nice.
There used to be an Oscar for Best Dance Direction. There used to be an Oscar for Best Short Film in Colour. There used to be an Oscar for Best Short Film Novelty. And there also used to be an Oscar for Best Title Writing, which is basically the dialogue in silent films.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh.
Just the, like the title cards.
Like literally the title cards. Yeah. Best title cards had its own Oscar back in the day.
I guess was that because it was like kind of hand design work and stuff like that?
I suppose, yeah. Or maybe it was to do with the timing of it being on screen. And
I guess it was quite integral to the film. So
yeah, I suppose it's like a form of cinematography.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But sadly, no best use of an animated dinosaur, which is the Oscar that Conrad won.
I enjoyed that Conrad qualifies it with, I've done better work. And Alan says, but have you? Yeah.
Is it around this point that Conrad starts to throw some product placement into the mix?
Yes, and I think he says Conrad Knight Socks four times before Alan realises as well.
So this is a bit of a weird celebrity product, and obviously recently we had Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina candle. So I've come up with a little game. I've come up with some fake and real celebrity-endorsed products.
Right.
And basically I want you to tell me whether it's true or false. Do they exist or do they not exist? We're looking for a group consensus here. Mm-hmm. So okay. I've got 10. I'm going to go through them, and all you need to do is tell me, is it true? Do they exist? Or is it false? They're fake. Okay, so number one, the Kiss casket. The band Kiss bought out a line of caskets.
Tragically,
oh, God, it sounds plausible.
Yeah. Tragically, I know for a fact this is true.
We're saying true.
Yeah, it is true.
It is true. They cost $3,000. Next up, the Kardashian. A Kardashian family prepaid credit card.
Oh. I mean, it
I mean, nothing would surprise me with that family.
Yeah, it sounds plausible.
Could it be true? Or is it? Is the play on words so bad that it couldn't be true?
Maybe.
Should we hope for the best and say false?
I'm going to say false because okay. They're the sort of family where I would believe it would be true. So I'm saying false.
Yeah, say false.
It's true. Yeah, $100 to own for 2 years, and the withdrawal fees were $1.50. They are no longer available.
Unbelievable.
Number three. Hanson's own beer called Hops.
Yes, that's real. Straight in there. Yep. Not even consulting us for our opinion.
No.
Sorry, I spend a lot of time on social media. I've seen Hops come and go.
Okay. So.
It is true.
Right.
It is a pale ale. That's my favourite one. JLS condoms. JLS condoms.
Also real.
Yeah, they're real.
True. Just Love Safe condoms were launched in 2010. Next up, Kerry Katona's Kerry Katona. As in
like a toning product.
Printer. No, printer for printers.
Okay.
No, toner false. For printers. False. No.
It should have been a toning product. It's got to be false.
It's got to be false.
Mac. It's true.
What?
No, it's not really. No. It's false.
Okay, so we're right. We don't get the bell. Come on.
Sorry.
Tom what? Dark works on a rewards-based system. You know that.
One Direction Cluedo.
I think this one is Tom Stab in the podcast with the blatant lie. Not true.
Yeah, get it on a Kickstarter though. I'm keen to fund.
Please be false.
It is false.
Yeah.
There is One Direction Monopoly though. That is true.
Oh.
Nelly's Pimp Juice.
I think that's true.
It's true, but the actual drink is going to be more innocuous than you're imagining.
It's true. Named after his 2002 single. Next up, number eight. Jessica Simpson's edible cosmetics.
Surely it's false. Oh. You're not going to like smudge something into your eyes and then eat it.
Oh, it's false.
Yeah.
Please be false.
I'm worried it's true,
Adam,
but I'm going to say...
Think about
I'm going to say false.
Edible cosmetics.
Say false.
It's true.
What?
Yeah,
what?
It's absolutely true, yeah.
Can we get more detail on this?
Only one that I've noted down here was deliciously kissable belly button love potion fragrance.
What?
That doesn't make any sense.
That's too many words for that to be a thing.
Look it up in your own time. It is true.
I won't bother.
Number nine, Noel Edmonds Bottom Wrinkle Cream for Crinkly Bottoms.
No, get
no,
out.
False.
I want it to be true and would purchase.
What's the consensus?
If there was some sort of claim that it cured a serious disease, I would believe it, but no.
It just cures a crinkly
bottom.
It's
false. Yep. And the last one, Rammstein Dildo Kit.
Yes, that's true.
True, got to be true.
Can't tell you how I know, but it's true.
That is true. That was rubbish. That is true. They are modelled on each band member's penis.
Wow.
Penises.
Staggering.
Adam,
you need to explain yourself off mic.
I just like to read about merch, that's all.
Yep, you did very well. I didn't keep a tally, but yeah, you did pretty well.
We did
so
fine.
That's the end. Yeah, there you go.
Quick bit of info on Conrad Knight Socks. You can actually buy Conrad Knight Socks.
What?
Yep.
It's a brand.
That's all I've got. No, I think it's basically, I think it's one of those Etsy, Redbubble type things where people, Partridge fan is just made. It's that sort of thing. You could probably have Conrad Knight mugs or pillowcases. It's whatever that image is. But yeah, you can get them.
Hi, Monkey Tennis listeners. It's producer Jed here, once again brazenly flouting the one word per episode rule to bring you some fantastic news. Now, I know what you're thinking out there. You're thinking, God, I wish there were more podcasts. And I'm here to tell you that myself and the joint third favourite Monkey Tennis host, Tom Dark, have conspired together to bring you just that. It's called Social Distancing Diaries, and we've managed to convince a bunch of famous people, stroke musicians, to give you some insight into what they're up to during lockdown. People like Roddy from Idlewild, Blaine from Mystery Jets, Billy from the Subways, and lots more. Later this week, we even get Lamar from Kajagoogoo to do the theme from Neverending Story. So subscribe now to Social Distancing Diaries, or Tom and I will drown in the swamp of eternal sadness and you'll feel bad. Now, back to the show.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Okay, it all gets very emotional at this point. Comrade had a heart attack. Sally had a nervous breakdown. Alan starts to well up, a transatlantic sea of tears, as he describes it. But the couple have a surprise for Alan to sing a little song, and Alan's going to sing too. This bit gets a bit strange. And also, Comrade mentioning Comrade Night Socks during the song is perhaps a step too far even for me.
Yeah, I feel like it's a shame. I think the beginning of this interview section was great. I thought the Conrad Night Sock stuff, the Agent in LA stuff was all really great. And then just the song, the comic payoff just isn't really there for me, I don't think. I don't know what you guys made of it.
Another every ruddy word error. The line, "You had a total nervous breakdown," is attributed to Alan in the book, but said by Kendall in the show.
Interesting.
I mean, at this point, it doesn't really matter. The whole thing's evidently
littered. Oh, yeah, it's littered. Absolutely littered.
But it is interesting the way this plays out, that Kendall is the one going for the journalistic journalistic digging in this episode, which we've seen Alan do previously.
But remember, also, he has asked a racing driver what his favourite colour car is.
He's inconsistent by his very nature.
Yeah, which really reminds me of that episode of Later with Jules Holland, where he once interviewed Kings of Leon and asked them what their favourite tree was. It didn't go down well.
Wow. The
next guest is Bernie Rosen, an American comedian. Alan introduces him by saying, "Knock, knock, who's there?" "Alan." "Alan who?" "Alan Partridge." "You've probably guessed I'm not a comedian, but my next guest is." So it seems that the only prerequisite to get on this show now is that you have to have been performing comedy while Alan eats a carvery near you. Mm. Alan was having a carvery and spotted this guy perform, and now miraculously he's filling out the bill on tonight's show.
So that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about this. Is the implication there as well that they've set up doing this whole live show in LA and they've actually struggled to fill guests? So, you know, obviously in the real world, that isn't what would happen. Like, you'd kind of get it all lined up before you're kind of in production. But obviously Alan's been having dinner the night before and gone, "Yeah, we'll just book him."
Yeah, it's absolutely that. And so the level of comedian that he's managed to get is very, very low. I mean, and also we know from the TV series, Alan's got a bit of a habit of thinking that he's got a knack for spotting hot new entertainers and then putting them straight on the show, and it always backfires.
Although actually, you say that, Cheeky Monkey and Joe Beasley, didn't he see them? It was a promise he made 15 years earlier he saw them at Home Seasons.
That's true. There's basically an issue here that there's a cross-Atlantic failure for the comedy to translate.
Do you think the audience has been briefed not to laugh at his jokes here?
Maybe, because I think
they fall a bit flat, don't they? And they're not terrible.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think immediately, like, it's signposted that the audience aren't on side with him because he says something like, not in the biblical sense, though, live in hope, eh, Kendall? So immediately the audience aren't on board with him and you know it's not going to go well. But I agree, like, not all of the jokes are terrible. Like, the joke where he said, we've got so much money here in Vegas, we call it Oi Vegas. That's not a great gag and the audience don't go with it.
Yeah.
But the following joke about that lady there looks like she just got in from a funeral her own, I thought that wasn't so bad. I thought that was vaguely amusing.
And it turns out that Alan's sort of touch points for British Jewish comedies are Shylock, Fagin and Maureen Lipman and the BT adverts as well. So there's like there's no cultural awareness really of Bernie's act, is there?
Yeah, and if you look at the line of questioning here, you've got Kendall is asking, is your comedy a defence mechanism? So she's actually asking interesting questions that could have quite good answers. Alan, who's your favourite comedian? So yeah, Alan's comfort zone in terms of an interview, it's kind of a smash hits level, isn't it? What's your favourite colour? What's your favourite breakfast?
I mean, he does say I think he says to at one point, keep it light.
Yeah.
Because he can see that it's going too far down a road that he doesn't want to pursue.
And then that's followed up by, how do you deal with anti-Semitism in your profession? then it just goes, oh God. Alan insists that Bernie tell us a joke about Jews, and then Alan claims he has a great joke about Jews, but no, his joke is anti-Semitic. I've also just got a note here. I think this must have just been a direct quote from Alan. Norwich is an attitude.
Love it. So Alan essentially says there are centres of excellence in the UK, namely Oxford, Cambridge and Norwich, and adds that Norwich isn't just a way of life, it's an attitude. I'm not sure what that attitude is. Maybe
bad attitude.
or a naughty attitude. Is it a naughty attitude, maybe?
So there's a few things, because that's kind of towards the end, isn't it? The bit about Norwich, I think. So a few things where I think Alan, earlier in the interview, Alan's starting to get audibly annoyed because he isn't really in control of the guests when he says, I'm sure you're a very funny man, but you never answered a question. I don't know what you're talking about. And I did wonder, did Alan even actually enjoy this guy's act when he saw him in the carvery or whatever it was? Like, what did he expect? Because he does a joke about liberal Jews, orange Jews, apple Jews, and he's saying, and he says, I wrote that joke for tonight, and Alan says, well, you shouldn't have bothered. It's like, what level of comedy did Alan think he was going to get from this guy?
I'm starting to think that what's happened is Alan has confused the good quality of a carvery with the good quality of a comedian, and he's had such a nice time eating this carvery, and there happened to be a comedian there that he's just sort of thought it was all good.
Yeah.
But then they talk about that he bought him a drink, so is it simply Alan's been that easily swayed to book him on his show because the guy bought him a drink with the first time they met?
Yeah,
quite surprising.
Especially if Alan's out there with researchers that don't like him and a co-host that outpaces him, and then he goes to a bar to eat a carvery on his own and a nice comedian buys him a drink.
The one person that's engaged him in conversation and offered to buy him a drink is like, you're booked on the show, come on tomorrow.
He's absolutely melted and said, yes, please be on telly.
I had another note as well that I think Alan says rich stream of Jewish comedy. Well, I presume he means seam of comedy, because you have a rich seam, not a rich stream. So just a little fluff in the script there.
I thought you could have a rich stream. Couldn't you?
I think the phrase is a rich seam.
He's
taking to Google. He doesn't believe me, even though producer Jed is nodding along.
I do think this
section... Do we trust Jed on any front?
Good point, actually. Nick, get to Google.
I do think this section is one of the weaker sections. And I
agree.
I think sometimes on Know Me, Knowing You, the acts that don't work actually don't work. Like, you know, sort of when they fall apart, it's not always very funny or good comedy content.
Apart from Max Beasley and
Apart
Cheeky
from
Monkey.
Max Beasley. Is it Max or Joe? Joe Beasley.
I keep saying
Max Beasley. Unbelievable.
Is Max Beasley a character in something else?
No, I think Max Beasley's an actor, isn't
he?
Beasley's an actor. It's Joe Beasley.
Is it Max Beasley in The Outsider?
That's why he's in my head, I think, because he's just turned up in The Outsider, isn't he?
Let's talk about that later.
Podsider?
Okay. Yes. Have we come to a conclusion on the scene versus stream, or are we willing to just let it go?
It's rich seam, and it's an idiom.
Okay.
You're an idiom.
There we go. Thank you very much. Now we can move on.
So the final guest of the show is one of the biggest, the highest big stakes gamblers in Vegas. Alan starts reading out just various bingo calls, etc. Legs 11, 11. It's Jack the Black Cat Coulson. Alan clearly gets his references muddled straight away. Hawaii 5-0 and Telly Savalas. He also clearly doesn't understand poker. And I sort of thought, what did he think he was going to be asking about in this interview? Because he doesn't know anything about any of the things that the guest knows.
I'm coming in with another Every Ruddy Word error. In Every Ruddy Word, it says Texas Holding. Oh, Texas Hold'em. Oh,
I didn't even spot that either.
This is all the attention of live closed caption on TV, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
It's, so as Jack the Black Coulson is talking through kind of how he plays, and you can hear Alan going, ooh, and reacting like that, and you can just tell he's got no idea what he's talking about. He's got no idea what any of the lingo means.
Just make noises and then it'll look like you know what you're
Although he does
about.
Have a huge amount of confidence about his foolproof roulette system. Does anyone remember what it was?
Doesn't he flip from one to the other? So it's heads
the coin
and
would
tails.
Always alternate heads to tails each time.
Exactly. He says it's foolproof, although he has only developed it on the plane over. And it works every time in his imagination.
Yeah. Which is probably one of the few times where Alan's imagination hasn't failed him.
That's true, yeah. So
he's normally
limits
himself with his imagination.
The system, in Alan's words, is if I toss a coin and it's heads, next time it's bound to be tails.
Anyone here done roulette or poker at all?
I'm not surprised Jed has. He's
Jed
in
has
Vegas every other week.
Trips to Vegas.
Before we get a bit more into that foolproof system, I did enjoy Alan talking about, oh, his name is Telly Savalas and he's on the telly. It's a bit like me being called Radio Partridge. It was Radio Caroline, wasn't there? That's her name. I enjoyed that bit.
Whose name?
Radio Caroline.
You know. Yeah,
I'm with you now. Is it time for Alan to start losing or winning some money?
It is. He thinks that Jack's Texan belly is going a little bit yellow.
So Alan decides to bet Jack $1,000 on the flip of a coin.
Yeah, and he's happy for that winning check to be made out to Great Ormond Street.
Yes, but
I did notice when it gets to $10,000, leave it blank.
Yeah. He'll write that. He'll finish it off.
Sort that out later.
Yeah, so yeah, he's won $1,000, then he wins $10,000.
Just walk away, Alan.
Of course he'll stop there. As you say, Jack starts to fill out the check to Great Ormond Street Hospital. Alan stops him because let's not be hasty. And then Alan, of course, discovers that Jack has a Mercedes. And at that point, I knew it was all over.
Yeah.
So have I missed something here? So obviously, Alan gambles away his
Granada
car.
His
maroon Ford Granada.
So correct me if I'm wrong, he's gambled away the car, but he's still 11 grand up.
No.
He hasn't gambled away the 11 grand. They just gamble the car.
But they're kind of like, they're increasing the stakes each
time.
So it's like,
but they don't, but I think
he's like, cancel the $1,000. Let's bet for $10,000.
Yeah,
cancel
fine.
The $10,000. Let's bet for the maroon Ford Granada Scorpion.
I think it could be clearer in the script. Scorpio. I think it could be clearer in the script because in the script there's no mention of like, oh, and let's add on like the car and stuff like that.
Okay,
let's get
Steve Coogan on the phone.
Yes, let's do that.
Steve, the script needs to be clearer.
We're going live to Steve now. Steve, do you agree with me? Yes, thanks. Great. Cheers.
Silence speaks volumes. So Alan drives a maroon Ford Granada Scorpio that he believes has a value of $20,000. I did briefly look up the value these days.
No chance.
Sold for about £1,100, if that.
That's not all, though. Alan is keen to try and do everything he can to win this back. And remember, his system is foolproof. So at this point, he offers up Carol's Micra, which, spoiler, he also loses.
Yeah, and I guess that is the thing about increasing the stakes doesn't work because there's no way that the Micra is...
I don't think it matters.
No.
The point is, Alan's lost everything.
But also, actually, is the stakes that it's betting two cars, not one. Yeah. I guess that's...
I also don't think it matters to Jack... Black Cat Coulson.
Oh, he's just playing with him by now, isn't he?
I don't even know if he doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to him what the stake is. He just loves gambling. So it could be like this bell or this book or whatever. He would just want to do. He just loves gambling. Yeah. So it doesn't matter.
And I think
him.
It's an opportunity to show Alan up as being an idiot as well, which he's quite keen on.
And this leaves Kendall, the co-host, to say one of Alan's bits because basically he's distraught at losing his and Carol's cars. and interestingly, these are the only credits that don't start with Steve Coogan's name at the beginning of the thanks.
Possibly
because it's not Steve Coogan reading it out.
I love the bit when he shouts to Kendall, go powder your nose, babe, to Kendall when she's trying to tell him to not gamble more. It's like the veil has really dropped. That's a view of the real Alan, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very like, much, you wouldn't like, understand this. Let
go,
the big boys
go
do
over
their
there,
thing.
Woman. This is like man's gambling business.
So, in the podcast, there has been some discussion about the correct way to pronounce Dune's name. Now, she does the outro as Kendall.
Right.
And she says, you know, because obviously they list the name of all the people who work with it, Steve Coogan, Patrick, blah, blah, blah. She says, Doom McKeon.
Yes.
So therefore, we've said, is it Doom McKeon? Where did Doom McKeon come from? It appears that Doom McKeon is the correct way to pronounce it.
Interesting. Well,
so it's not McKeon.
That's settled then.
A long-running debate finally solved.
If that's how she's saying it, I think that's definitely going to be the way to do it, yeah.
Super. Well, that
it's only taken us 4 years to get that.
That brings us to the end of episode 5 of Know Me, Knowing You, the radio series. If you've got any thoughts, comments or suggestions about it or some bits that we've missed, I'm sure there are a couple at least this episode. It's thepartridgepod@gmail.com, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, Twitter @thepartridgepod, Instagram @monkeytennispod, and the Monkey Tennis hotline is 07923 600 017. If you're feeling particularly generous and you've enjoyed all of the work we've done over the years dissecting Alan for your pleasure, then please do go to ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. And you can drop us a coffee, or if you're feeling particularly generous, 5 coffees so that even producer Jed can have one. Thanks so much for all your support. Everyone who listens, supports us, goes to Ko-fi, subscribes, rates us, and all of that jazz. We'll be back with episode 6 of Knowing Me, Knowing You, the radio series next week. But for now, from everyone at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, thank you so much and goodbye.
Go paddy your nose, Adam.
So what happened in Vegas, Jed?
Welcome to Knowing Me, Knowing You, Knowing Me, Alan Partridge, Knowing You, the audience. I've got a hit on my hands.
Monkey tennis?
Is that good therapy or balmy old cack?
Conrad Knightsock.
Monkey tennis?
I'm Alan Partridge.
Why are you such a kid?
Lots of meaty chat.
Monkey tennis?
I just want you to admit that you hate Les Dennis.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
Monkey tennis?
Okay, I'm in Manhattan. What do I do now?
You are a little shit.
Monkey tennis?
That in England is a whore. I've taken drugs!
Lord Morgan.
If you speak again, I will physically hit you.
And on that bombshell...
Monkey tennis?
Thank goodness it's radio. I never thought I'd say that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.